Welcome to the Huntington Disease edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the HD community.
Hello, and welcome to the Rare Care Podcast. This is your host, Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're on the line today with Jimmy Pollard of Lowell, Massachusetts. Over the past 38 years, Jimmy has become a household name in the Huntington community, even though he himself doesn't have the disease, nor does anyone in his family. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Larry. Thanks for the opportunity to speak together.
So why do you do it? How did you get started, and what led you to this mission?
How I got started is I'm, first of all, a special education teacher by training and background who got a job in a nursing home. So when special ed is in the education setting, it's special ed, the same thing, the same curriculum and the same strategies. When you put them in the medical world of a nursing home, they become rehab. So in that setting, in 1986, we got our first referral of a young woman living with Huntington's disease. And our facility, particularly myself and the nursing director, who were charged with admitting people, making the admission decisions, had no idea what Huntington's disease was. So we heard through our colleagues that it was difficult to manage folks and all that. I could be more detailed, but I won't. And we ended up, based on what we heard, rejecting this young woman for admission. And her mother called me and said, "You have all the services my daughter needs. Why won't you give her the opportunity?" And because she very gently, quietly pushed back, we ended up admitting her daughter. Literally, Larry, if she did not do that, I wouldn't be here talking to you today. And then we didn't, in that nursing home, know how well families with Huntington's disease are connected. So we kept getting referrals. And 2 years later, we had about 45 residents.
Where and when did this take place?
That was in Lowell, Massachusetts. The facility was known by several names because it was the era where nursing home companies were buying up smaller ones to grow. It ended with the name Mediplex of Lowell. So anyway, after 2 years, we had 45 residents with HD. And by 4 years later, we had we had 61 residents with HD. So that's how I get into it.
Incredible. And at that time, not much really was known about Huntington.
No, very little was known. You would hear families. So obviously it predates the internet, 1986. You would often hear families talking about having to go to public libraries to look up stuff in medical manuals and things and find very little that was utility to them. It would say progressive neurologic disease, but it was not a lot of help.
Yet Woody Guthrie died of Huntington, and everybody who knows anything about Huntington knows at least that.
Correct. Yeah, Woody led walked a full road of HD and wrote about it a lot.
And you knew the family, right?
I know Woody's son, Arlo, and I know very well his grandson and his wife, Abe and Lisa Guthrie. I know all of Abe's siblings. That's here in Western Massachusetts. I'm avoiding long, protracted stories here, but I also ended up running a pancake breakfast at the Woody Guthrie Festival in Okemo, Oklahoma, where I came to know Woody's baby sister, the late Mary Jo Edgman. So I know a lot of the family in all parts of the country.
Would it be correct to say in some sense that Woody Guthrie helped put Huntington on the map?
I'm going to answer that in the words of somebody else's words. And the other person is the late Guy Logsdon, who was a professor at the University of Tulsa, I think in library science. But he was also a curator fan of folklore. He was a key player in this Woody Guthrie Festival. And I came to know Guy. And what Guy would say is, ultimately, Woody Guthrie's most notable contribution will be that he brought attention to Huntington's disease.
That's amazing. Absolutely amazing. Since the time you started working with people who have Huntington until today, have you seen much progress in terms of research and quality of life?
As I always like to say, there's only so much bandwidth within any community for attention and discussion. So it's driven now by the process or progress or stops, lack of progress on clinical trials. Meanwhile, the basic science continues to grow with notions like, or discoveries like, somatic instability or genetic modifiers, which, without all the wonderful clinical trials that are going on, if they just weren't there, we would be celebrating these other advances. So I think those don't get enough attention as signs of progress. Obviously, they're not going to generate anything now, but they are major things in unlocking the very genetic level of HD. In terms of care, I kind of set out to understand how cognitive deficits, to use a medical term, which I have struck in my head and replaced with challenges in thinking. The challenges in thinking that come with this neurologic disease and how they impact people's lives, both people who are walking their own HD roads, like Woody did, and also the people that love them or surround them and care with them. Trying to understand what we can do here and now to accommodate those. Until, you know, science does its thing, all we can do is care. Marjorie Guthrie used to say, and I remember reading in a newsletter, until there's a cure, there's only care. I have decided that based on my experience in nursing homes, most of the challenges come from those cognitive changes and what we can do to accommodate them. So I don't think it's changed very much, despite my efforts. Still today, people need to learn to slow down, do one thing at a time, wait for people to respond. These are fundamental basic things that by nature are easy to do, but ironically are really impossible in the cultures we live in. The simple accommodations, the profound irony is this so simple to understand, but almost impossible for us to do. But they can make significant changes in the experience for people who walk in their roads and the people who love them and surround them.
That's a very profound way to say it. I just want to interject if I can. You came up with the idea of a gratitude day, and I'd like to talk about that.
I did, but it's... There's another theme that I should point out when just based on you mentioning gratitude day. Every step of my HD adventure, I've always been part of a team. Sometimes the leader, sometimes the second in command, sometimes just a part of the team. And that is a significant thing. I had colleagues in those nursing homes I mentioned, and I have colleagues on gratitude day. If you said whose original idea was it, yes, it was mine. But there were others. The hand sign that comes in was Christina Ferrer and her daughter. Nacho, the spirit and founder of Factor H. All those people play a role in Gratitude Day.
What's your role within Factor H? Have you ever been to these communities in either Venezuela, Peru, or Colombia that are affected by them? And if not, maybe just explain why this is so important.
So I know the story of how Nancy Wexler's group in the U.S. Venezuelan collaborative research team used to go down and draw blood samples and skin samples for their DNA and family histories from those families in the villages of Venezuela, particularly Barranquitas and San Luis, and knew and still know many of the doctors who accompanied Nancy, know Nancy. So I've always been aware of that. And then at the Guthrie Center here in Western Massachusetts, we always have a pledge walk to raise money. And over the years, and we knew we couldn't raise a lot, so we wanted it to go to really worthy causes in smaller groups. So for years, our roughly $10,000 would always go to Venezuela. This is long before Factor H and Nacho. So it was always on my radar screen. I knew the problems they had delivering the most fundamental care. when I asked the woman who we would send the money to what actually is GoFor for, and I admit I was somewhat surprised that it went for antibiotics and pillows and mattresses. So it was always on my radar screen. And then I met Nacho, and Nacho asked me, so now we'll get into what my role is, because I'm more of a, I'm not a be on a board guy, and I don't do well with committees, sadly. If I could help get the greater HD family worldwide, could I just get them to know a bit more about Factor H, including its existence and what it does? So that seemed like a reasonable assignment. So I said, yeah, I'm in. I still believe that everybody in the worldwide family has got their thing, what they do, whether they're doing it as associations, individuals, jazz style, collaborate, whatever. But they're all worthwhile. I think the neediest people that any dollar or any effort can have the most significant impact is in those villages in Venezuela with those people.
We're almost out of time. I'm sorry. I just wanted to ask you briefly. I understand that either you recently won an award or will be presented an award. I wasn't quite sure about your work with HD. Elaborate on that.
I only got one award in my life. So, and it was recently, like in November, I think, from the Huntington Society of Canada. It was called the Founders Award. It was a very special to me because I was brought into this in my story. We didn't cover this by Ralph Walker, who was with his wife, Ariel, the founder. And he passed away young. So, yeah, it was very special for me to get that from the Honey Side of Canada.
Okay, we're out of time. We have been speaking with Jimmy Pollard, an activist in the Huntington disease community for many years from Lowell, Massachusetts. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor. Thank you.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.